Srila Prabhupada ki, Sri Bhakti Vedanta ki, Grantaraja Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Giridas Maharaj ki, Jaita Gopurnanda. Okay. So, tonight we'll finish the 13th chapter of the 7th canto. So we're discussing the Varnashram system of the 7th canto. Brinda?
Brinda.
Brinda. You have to be quiet. Okay. Almost. So we're discussing the Varnashram system of the 7th canto, the final section. Now we have in the 11th chapter a description of the different Varnas, very briefly, the qualities that all human beings should have. Then we have a description of Sri Dharma, of the behavior of women in the Vedic culture. Then we have the description of Varna Sankara, those are outside of the Vedic culture. 12th chapter, and then we have the description of Brahmacharis and then Varnaprastas. 13th chapter, which we'll finish tonight, is a description of the sannyasis. And then the last two chapters, next week there'll be no class, and then the week after that we'll start 14 and 15, which are Grihastha Dharma. So that might be very relevant for all of us. Find out how to be paka Grihasthas. So, we heard last night how in order to describe the qualities of a sannyasi, the mentality or the consciousness of a sannyasi, then Narada describes a conversation between Prahlad Maharaj and a Brahmana who he has met. So the Brahmana has given him instructions, and tonight the Brahmana will continue to instruct him. We'll go from verses 35 to 46, and we will hear how the Brahmana instructs Prahlad Maharaj that we should take the example of the python and the bee, and we should perfect our consciousness in the human form of life. So, any points? So, okay. So we'll continue with text 35. The bee and the python are two excellent spiritual masters who give us exemplary instructions regarding how to be satisfied by collecting only a little and how to stay in one place and not move. So what are the points here? Yeah, we should live simply. Like that. In other words, we're being taught by the Bhagavatam that we should see the Guru in all circumstances. In the 11th canto, in the Uddhava Gita, there is a long description of all the different types of gurus that we can see in the material energy. So practically everywhere, you can learn something from practically every person, every animal, every plant, every situation you find yourself in. Practically, we can be instructed in every situation. So a devotee sees guru practically everywhere. So we are seeing that the python is our guru, right? And the bee is our guru. Guru means, literally in Sanskrit, the word guru means heavy. When the tree has a lot of fruit on it, then we call it guru. It is heavy. So guru, the word means heavy. It means laden with knowledge in the sense of the spiritual master. The spiritual master is heavy with what? Knowledge. With purport of the Vedas. So we can see guru in so many situations. Many situations like that. Just like Srila Prabhupada in 1966, maybe 67, then he's preaching in 26 Second Avenue, and even one doctor came to see him because Prabhupada had a stroke. And half of Prabhupada's body was paralyzed. So the doctor came to see Srila Prabhupada, And Brahmananda Prabhu and Gargamuni Prabhu, they were there with Prabhupada. They said the doctor was drunk when he came to see Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada had a stroke, so they asked, what should Prabhupada do? And the doctor said, he should just go for a good walk every day. He's not doing anything, that's why he's had the stroke, because his body is, like, paralyzed. He needs to get the circulation going, he needs to go for a walk. So then Prabhupada took it that drunk doctor was Krishna speaking through the doctor. So Prabhupada saw in that circumstance the doctor was the guru. So then Prabhupada began the morning walk. Up until that point, there wasn't a morning walk. But then you'll see Prabhupada is famous for every morning he had the morning walk. He'd always go on his morning walks. Like that. Here in Melbourne, he walked Beaconsfield Parade on the other side of the road, on the beach. Prabhupada walked all the way from here down to St Kilda. So that is a tirtha, that place. The botanical gardens, Srila Prabhupada's walked practically every path in the Royal Botanical Gardens. Very beautiful gardens. Prabhupada actually said they're some of the most beautiful gardens in the world. If you go to those gardens, they're extremely beautiful if you go to them. So, we see guru in all circumstances. Even non-devotees can be our guru. Because sometimes non-devotees say something, but you understand that this is Krishna speaking. Krishna is instructing me through this person. So a devotee learns to see guru in all places and all circumstances. Just like in the Madhurya Kadambini, then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says when a devotee becomes very advanced, he'll be walking down a path, for example, say in Vrindavan, and he'll see a deer coming towards him. And then he thinks in his mind, if the deer crosses on my right side, Krishna is happy with me. And if he crosses on my left side, then Krishna is unhappy with me. So we see Krishna and Guru in all circumstances. You can do these things. So this is ways that Guru will appear to us, way that Krishna. So even the python, even the bee, we can see them as spiritual master if we have knowledge or the proper vision. So, any points?
I thought the bee doesn't stay at one place.
The python stays in one place.
Yes, but
the bee does not stay in one place. But the python stays in one place.
Yes,
but the bee does not.
That's right. Yeah. But you say this.
No, if you read it, what it says is the bee and the python are two excellent spiritual masters,
right,
who give us instructions regarding how to be satisfied by collecting only a little. That's the bee. Mm. And how to stay in one place and not move. That's the python.
Oh, okay. Tig?
Okay.
You said guru means remover.
Remover of darkness. I haven't heard that described. But I haven't heard, but could be. But in Sanskrit, then guru means heavy. Laku means light. So when something is light, just like milk, if you drink milk, that is laku in Ayurveda. If you eat rice, that is laku in Ayurveda, light. If you just have milk or just have rice, that's light. But if you mix them together, then it becomes sweet rice, kia, that is guru. That is heavy, heavy to digest.
And guru's compared to that, what we call heavy.
Knowledge. Yeah. I gave the example of the tree. So the tree has many fruits. He's called guru because the tree is heavy with knowledge. So the guru is heavy with knowledge. So. Any other points? Depends how advanced you are. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says the advanced devotee can see like that. for us, then we have to check with the guru, with the Vaishnavas. Any other points? From the bumblebee, I have learned to be unattached to accumulating money. For although money is as good as honey, one can kill its owner and take it away. I know. Purport about money being like honey.
The honey gathered in the comb is taken away by force. Therefore, one who accumulates money should realize that he may be harassed by the government or by thieves or even killed by enemies. Especially in this age of Kali Yuga, it is said that instead of protecting the money of the citizens, the government itself will take away the money with the force of law. The learned Brahmana had therefore decided that he should not accumulate any money. One should own as much as he immediately needs. There is no need to keep a big balance at hand, along with the fear that it may be plundered by the government or by people.
Any points?
When you have less money, you are in fear. When you have more money, you are perhaps good to have.
What is it?
Perhaps it's a good idea just to have what you need. My little, little money.
There's some gurus in India. They're accumulating their money by preaching to people or books. They have a lot of following. One of the latest examples is Asharam. He has so much, he accumulated so much wealth, the government taking every day, or he got so much here, he looted so much here, he now they're taking his money, the government. Even he has accumulated so many millions, he has 400 ashrams. He got caught, he was trying to rape a girl or something. So he reported to the police. So all the money he's accumulated. He was preaching, he was Lord Ram forward. Nice lecture he used to give. But he was never one of any guru or so. Now all the money he has accumulated, been taken away, will be taken away.
Any other points?
It's a bit hard to know how much you need. Because the bills keep on coming.
Good point. Any other points?
I think financial training is very, very important from a very young age, just like spiritual training. Because that's one thing that if you get it wrong, and your whole life can be in care. And it's something that's not taught in school. It should come from parents and everything. We teach you how to manage money properly through a spiritual mentor. Because the whole world is one of the reasons big imbalances, not being able to forecast your financial needs, so that you always have this fear that you don't have enough for you and for your family.
Anything else? So, I suppose this purport is wrecked out. Day. Everything we've done today, that purport has just completely dismantled it. So there's nothing very much more to say, really. But the point is that, according to, there's different ways of looking at it. Right? Prabhupada is saying here specifically in the purport that one should own as much as he immediately needs. But then Rupa Goswami has instructed us, and Prabhupada often says, we should accumulate wealth, and whatever we accumulate, 50% we should use for preaching, 25% we should use for our expenditures, and 25% we should keep for emergencies, like that. So it is not that we don't keep wealth. Mm-hmm. And I would even go so far as to say that if the wealth can be used in Krishna's service, the devotees, the grihasthas especially, they should become extremely wealthy. You know, it's not wrong becoming wealthy. I would say that, even though Prabhupada's saying a different thing here in this purport, but I would say my realization is that devotees should become wealthy, grihasthas, like that, because you can see how much can be done for ISKCON when the grihasthas have wealth. Right? When ISKCON is always struggling, because one of our main problems in ISKCON is we don't have enough money to do things. Right? So if the grihasthas can become wealthy, right, then they can use their money for Krishna consciousness. Right? What's probably the leading example in our movement is Ambarish Prabhu. Right? He just gave $60 million for the Vedic Planetarium. So imagine if we had 10 Ambarishas in our movement, or 100, or 1,000, or a million Ambarish Prabhus. You know, devotees have, and then how much we could do with our wealth like that. So, different ways of looking at it, like that. So either you can just get enough to live comfortably, right? As Manoj was saying, not too little that we're in poverty and things are too difficult, not too much that we become distracted, or as Mataji is saying, enough so we can pay the bills and live comfortably without anxiety. Or, if you're going to get into accumulation of wealth, then make a lot of money, right? Make as much as you can, and then use it in Krishna's service. Use it in the service of Guru and Krishna. Because ISKCON needs the money. We need the wealth. And if we have wealthy members, we can do so much. But the point is, personally, we should live very simply. Just like there was an example a couple of years ago. Maybe you can remember who it was. One guy, for one financial year, he became the wealthiest guy in the world. He overtook Bill Gates 1 year. I think it was an insurance company or something. What was that? Yeah, I think that's him. Like that. So he became the richest guy in the world 1 year. Not, I don't think he is this year or the last year, but a couple of years back. He was the richest guy in the world. But personally, he kept his wage for his company, even though it was the company had unlimited money, overtook Microsoft in terms of its earnings. But his personal wage per annum was $100,000 a year. And he didn't change it, even when the company just went extremely wealthy. So personally, we just live comfortably, simply. Don't over-accumulate. But if we make a lot of money, then we can use that for ISKCON. That's the point. So at least, as is being said, we should live fairly simply. Not too simply that you're in poverty, but not too much that you become distracted. The whole point is to keep the body and soul together so you can advance in Krishna consciousness. If you have too little, your mind is distracted. If you have too much, your mind is distracted. So have the right amount. Right? But also save for the future. Even though Prabhupada is saying in this purport, he is saying just have enough for the immediate needs. But Rupa Goswami has told us to always keep money in for emergency. There always needs to be a backup there. Right? You need to have just money for emergency, just kept like that. And live on. Ideally, you could live on 25% yourself, give 50% to the movement, to Guru and Krishna, and the other 25% you can keep as for emergency stock. So that's the basic, even though Prabhupada here is saying it very simply. But one thing to understand is that this chapter is instructions for the sannyasis. Grihastha Dharma is in the next chapter 14 and 15. This is more sannyasi. Sannyasi should be very simple, no doubt. Although in Kali Yuga, usually the sannyasis have more money than the grihasthas. Because it's Kali Yuga.
They call sannyasis.
What's that?
They call sannyasis, but they
are not sannyasis. Yeah, those ones. But even in ISKCON, you'll see that many of the sannyasis are incredibly wealthy. If you look at some of the sannyasis are incredibly wealthy in ISKCON. Like that. But they're using their money for Krishna consciousness. Any other points?
So if a person who is doing pure devotional service and doing that only, and a person trying to accumulate wealth and still using it for Krishna's service, is the destination for both the same?
Yeah. Same. So if you're a grihastha and you're working and making a lot of money, but you're sacrificing a large portion for Guru and Krishna, then the guru is going back to Godhead because he's an unalloyed devotee, and you are supporting him through financial assistance, then you'll get the same destination that he gets. He will take you back to Godhead. Prabhupada said to Ambarish Prabhu, build the temple in Mayapur. He gave him that instruction. You know, he said to Ambarish Prabhu, buy the Fisher Mansion in Detroit. Prabhupada went for a tour through the mansion. You remember then the Lilamrita? The story is there. Yeah, they took him for a tour through the mansion. And at the end of the tour, Prabhupada turned around to the real estate agent. He said, so I think you should give it to us. Just donate it. And the guy just looked at him like that. So then Prabhupada said, okay, I'll give you $300,000 cash. All right. And the man said, okay. And Prabhupada didn't even know where he'd get it. So then he went to Ambarish Prabhu was there. So then the guy left and he said to Ambarish Prabhu, he said, so okay, we need the money. So Ambarish Prabhu gave $150,000 and the other disciple gave $150,000. Any other points?
Prabhu, if somebody is really rich enough, Prabhu, their surrender level will cannot be that much as somebody is in a level where we are dependent on Krishna. If somebody is really very rich, they cannot be, bhakti will not be so much good as much as if somebody is on a middle class level and dependent on Krishna.
Wrong.
Because the wealth itself
will
make that person
be. No, not necessarily. Because if you look at Prahlad Maharaj, mm-hmm. Prahlad Maharaj owns the whole universe.
Mm-hmm. Prahlad Maharaj, Guru Maharaj, they are few devotees. I'm talking about people in Kaluga. The wealth itself, that's why Kunti Devi says no. She says that all this education, high parentage, wealth, everything, there are chances that it can separate you away from Krishna. So that is why Krishna will see how much we need and he will give you. He won't give you too much. And sometimes you may go away from him if he gives you too much. So he will see whether you need it and then he will let it.
It's a Lila Maya Gita.
Mm-hmm.
I'm waiting for it to come out. I will buy the book. All the famous sayings. But Sharada Rada's book will sell more copies. I'm waiting for your book to come.
Yes?
Yeah.
My book?
Yeah. All your famous sayings. I'm waiting for that. Okay. I do not endeavor to get anything, but am satisfied with whatever is achieved in its own way. If I do not get anything, I am patient and unagitated like a python and lie down in this way for many days. Jagannath Ram Prabhu, would you like to read that?
One should not detach from the beach, for you collect drops of money here and there and keep it in your honeycomb. But then someone comes and the horse takes all the honey away, leaving the bumblebee with nothing. Therefore, one should learn from the bumblebee not to keep more money than one needs. Similarly, one should learn from the python to stay in one place for many, many days without food, and then eat only if something comes in its own way. Thus, the learned Brahmana gave instructions.
So, what are the points?
We should not go very far to work.
What is it?
We should work in the
village.
We should not travel too far to go to work.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's a good point. Anything else?
Human endeavor is not dependent.
Achahara. Priyashas.
True. Conversation happening between Ramana and Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj didn't really require all this instruction because he was already in a very elevated platform. So, we understand that all the instructions for the
yeah, it's for Janeshwara. Same as Bhagavad Gita, it wasn't for Arjuna, it was for us. So.
Yeah. context in which he's bringing in.
Krishna knew that we would be sitting here listening to this in the future, so it's for us. Prahlad Maharaj doesn't need these instructions. Any other point? So the point is that this is sannyas dharma. These are the instructions for the sannyasis. And what is the instruction? The instruction for the sannyasi is that sannyasi should be dependent upon Krishna. So it should be like a python. Python means he just stays in one place. He doesn't endeavor, but he waits for what Krishna will send him. And you see in Chaitanya Charitamrita famous examples, like the example of Madhavendra Puri, who was just in Vrindavan, and he wasn't even doing Madhukari. It is said that the sannyasis are allowed to do Madhukari, which means they're allowed to go to 7 homes in one day and beg, please, can I have some charch? Can I have some roti? Like that. I did Brunch Mandal Parikram in 1994, and then in the mornings, we would get up early, have Mangalati, and then about 5 o'clock we'd start walking. So we walked all around Vrindavan in 1 month during Brunch Mandal Parikram, 400 kilometres in a month, barefoot, very ecstatic. So we were going around, and then in the morning around about 6-7 o'clock we'd go through some of the villages, and then it was like a transcendental SWAT team. We'd all break off, Kala Sambara Prabhu, myself, and some other devotees. As we went through the village, we'd just start going into the Brijbasi's houses and doing Madhukari. We're just going because they were churning their charch, their buttermilk, and making their rotis. And actually, we weren't even that hungry, but it was just like such a blessing to get buttermilk or roti from the Brijbasi's hands. So we would just go to their doors and we would say, Mai, charch, or dut, or roti, like that. And then they would make, quite often they'd be very happy that you just walked into their courtyard. And they'd just say, sit down. Like that. And then they'd just start making rotis. And it was around lunchtime, and they'd say, sit down. And they'd start, pulling out the vegetables, cutting up to make sabjis, like that. We didn't have time to stay, but, we just maybe take one or two things and then go. But the sannyasi, he's allowed to do Madhukari. He's allowed to go to 7 houses every day and beg for something. Can I please have some roti, some charch, like that. And then, after 7 houses, then he cannot go any further. So he's like a bumblebee, Madhukari. It means he can go from flower to flower and take something like that. But even more, you could say even more dependent upon Krishna, is when you become like a python. The sannyasi, he doesn't even go to door, but he just stays in one place, chants Hare Krishna, and whatever comes to him. So that's a very high level of surrender. Hands up if you could do that.
But I thought the python takes as a bed, and in bed he swallows even the big animals.
Yeah, but he waits. He just stays in one place and he waits for whatever comes. Sometimes something doesn't come for 1 week, but then something comes and he eats it, and then he waits maybe. So sometimes he gets a lot, sometimes he doesn't get very much.
Even the goat,
when he gets a lot,
the big goat.
And it takes maybe 1 week to digest it. But the point is that he's just waiting. Mm-hmm. He doesn't go anywhere. Mm-hmm. So it's a very high level of renunciation.
When he is and has to come in the village, people take things for him, but whatever he eats, the other thing he left over to brother. He doesn't keep to that.
So it's a very high level of renunciation. And we see in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you see Madhavendra Puri was actually living on this level. It's not something I could imagine doing. Just sitting in one place and just whatever comes.
You can do that in India. If you do it, you will be more famous. A lot of people doing a lot of things. I have seen it. Even if you are not Pakka Sadhu, people bring. And you have wonders of them. But if you are real Sadhu, so it should be anything.
Yeah, it's true. In India, it's easier to do it. In Australia, it would be very difficult to do it. sit in one place and wait for someone to come.
But if the Indian knows, if the sadhu is not eating anything, they will take the goat there. They will ask him something, give some benediction, they will take the thing.
In Melbourne it probably work. Like if someone, if a sannyasi was here, then everyone would just come and give to him.
Yeah.
Like that. So. But it's a high level of renunciation. This sannyasi, which has been met by Prahlad Maharaj, he's just living in the field. He's just sleeping on the earth. He's not even in a home like that. He's just completely dependent on Krishna. Like Madhavendra Puri, he was just wandering through Vrindavan, sitting next to Govinda Kund. That's a very advanced level of devotion.
So how are you so fast?
He explains in the next couple of verses like that. Okay. Sometimes I eat a very small quantity and sometimes a great quantity. Sometimes the food is very palatable and sometimes it is stale. Sometimes prasad is offered with great respect and sometimes food is given neglectfully. Sometimes I eat during the day and sometimes at night. Thus I eat what is easily available. So it's a high level of advancement. Means we have to be genuinely detached. This is vairagya, like that. Just whatever prasad you get. Usually we're very particular about what prasad we get. We want very particular things. We won't just eat whatever comes like that. Just like you see some of the Indian men very attached to having their paratha. Have to have their paratha every day, you know, for breakfast. Very attached to their particular type of prasad that they eat like that. So, you know, we have attachments. But this is a high level of advancement. Just whatever comes, then he will accept it. He doesn't say, okay, no, I don't want this, I don't want that. He doesn't go on Madhukari and then someone gives him something. He says, I don't want this. He just accepts whatever he's given. So it's a high level of advancement, something that cannot be easily imitated. Better you just say, how many of your paratas and whatever you're attached to. To cover my body, I use whatever is available. Whether it be linen, silk, cotton, bark, or deer skin. According to my destiny, and I am fully satisfied and unagitated. So, these are the same instructions that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave to Raghunath Das Goswami in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. The story of Raghunath Das Goswami was that he was a very wealthy son of a zamindar, tax collector, right? Very wealthy, in the equivalent of these days of being a millionaire. So he was extremely wealthy, but all he wanted to do was to renounce his wife. It says his wife was as beautiful as an apsara. And it says that he had as much wealth as Indra. It means he's very wealthy. So he had so much material facility, but he was not attached to it. He just wanted to go and meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So finally he escaped from his parents after many attempts. And he went to Puri and he met with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And when Lord Chaitanya saw him there, Lord Chaitanya said, now you take shelter of Swarup Damodara Goswami, who was Lord Chaitanya's personal secretary, assistant. So then he became the Raghunath of Swarup. So he served Swarup Damodara Goswami and he lived in a very renounced way. So one day, because he was very humble, he wouldn't even directly speak to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One day he said to Lord Chaitanya, through Swarup Damodara Goswami, he asked Swarup Damodara Goswami, you please ask Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what are my duties? And Lord Chaitanya said, actually, Swarup Damodara is more qualified to instruct you than I am. But since you're asking me, these are the duties I give you as a person in the renounced order of life. So one who is in the renounced order of life, they should follow these principles. So he said, do not eat very opulent food, and do not dress very opulently. So someone in the renounced order of life should not be attached to eating opulent food. Right? We have to learn to eat simple food and be satisfied with simple food, which, you know, may be very difficult for the devotees in ISKCON, because there's so much opulent prasad. Devotees in ISKCON are very attached to opulent prasad. Just like on the weekend, we had a retreat at the farm, and we also had the Sunday feast on top of that. On Monday, I fasted. Yesterday, I fasted because, you know, too much prasad. I felt like, okay, that's enough. So once a week or every second week or so, I try to fast. Then the devotees on the farm, they went to the fridge and reheated what was left over. So for lunch, they were eating potato goranga, gulab jamun, and I can't remember what else, but very opulent lunch like that. So Prabhupada actually said we should eat like that once a week, but not like every day. In ISKCON, it's like that practically every day. Curd sabji every day, and, you know, paneer every day, and sour cream every day, and gulab jamun every day, and a little bit of Srikhand. Stash the Srikhand from Jamashtami and then eat it for 1 month. I know one devotee used to take the Srikhand after Jamashtami, sometimes on Prabhupada's feast. Jamashtami in the evening, there'd be buckets left over. So one year he took a bucket or half a bucket or something back to his house, and he was eating it every day for a month after that. And he was even having it on toast. And Srikhand in the morning, putting it on toast. Eating Srikhand. So you can do it. It's okay. But those in the renounced order of life should not eat like that, because the senses will become overstimulated. Too much sugar, too much ghee. Krishna says in Gita, all these rich foods, they will overstimulate the body. So you have to be careful. Practice some renunciation. Like that. Eat simply. And then once a week, then have a big feast. Right? Satisfy your senses. We all like to satisfy our senses. But you should eat simply. And those in the renounced order of life, they should eat very simply. So the senses stay under control. If you eat rich food, it's hard to control the senses. Particularly if you're inactive. Which those in the renounced order of life, they're quite inactive. So. And then in this verse it says, do not dress opulently. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu specifically says that those in the renounced order of life should not dress opulently. They should dress very simply. So sannyasis and brahmacharis, and they should dress very simply, not opulently. Otherwise they become attached to the bodily concept of life. I know some of the sannyasis, they wear glasses, you know, but when they go to buy new glasses, they always choose the simpler, more simple models. Because these days the glasses become very fancy, like they're like a strong fashion statement. So the sannyasis, I know some of them, when they go to get new glasses, they choose the very simple ones, because they don't want to become attractive to the opposite sex. So that is the duty of the... Because why do we dress opulently? Why do we dress nicely? We just want to attract the opposite sex. Just like today, I had to go to the... Vic Roads, which is over in Camberwell. I haven't been to Camberwell for a long time. I went through Camberwell tour. I haven't been through there for a long time. I used to go there a lot when I was doing Sankirtan. But everyone there, they're very much in the bodily concept of life. Everyone wears very rich clothes. They have a lot of money in that part of Melbourne. So very, you know, all the designer shops are there, and everyone's wearing, but everyone's very much in the bodily concept of life. So devotees, we should be well dressed so that we will be respected, but we should not become too overly attached to what we wear. Otherwise you simply get in the bodily concept of life and you become preoccupied with attracting the opposite sex. That's why as Vaishnavas we shave our head, because as soon as you grow your hair, right, then you're in the mirror every day. Since I've been a devotee last more than 20 years, I've never had more hair than, you know, maybe another 2 weeks I'll grow and then I'll shave. Only one time in the last 20 years I grew my hair. It was when I went to Africa. We were selling paintings for the temple in Africa. And because we're traveling in Muslim countries like Tanzania and places like that, we had to grow our hair so that we didn't look like devotees. And only time in the last 20 years since I've been a devotee that I could actually part my hair. You know, because it was about, you know, a couple of months worth of hair or something like that. And I noticed as soon as I had hair, every time I went past the mirror, I'd always be looking, you know, just to make sure it was like, you know, in the right place. So we were so happy when that was finished and we could shave our head again. Because when you don't have hair, you don't worry. That's why devotees renounce hair. That's why we dress very simply. We should be respectful. We should look nice and well-dressed, but we should not get overly attached, especially if you're in the renounced order of life. So, any points? Yeah, I thought that as well. Because they ran out on the midnight test. Yeah. And I bet Jai Sachin would have taken.
She was upset.
Yeah.
She prepared 14, so this year she just wish more to prepare. She called me in the morning, Prabhupada, and she called me from the car and said, Prabhu, go to the Kulukul and just find out there should be some Srikant somewhere because it was not served yesterday. So I went and I got one bucket that was served in Prabhupada's.
Yeah, that's to be tied to security. That's the problem when you get the Gujarat is cooking the feast. I bet you there's something going on over there in Ormond. Coming over to check the fridges over there. Radhatran used to take it when he was here, but he would wait till it's been served. But usually there was stuff left. He'd take a whole bucket back to his office. He'd sit there for a month just eating it. Jai Sachi would always take to it, but after it's been served. Okay. But yeah, I think something did happen this week. I didn't even get any shrikan on the midnight feast. Yeah, something happened. That's not good. They should serve to the public. If anything's left, then you take it, but you should not take it. It's like you see sometimes at Mahaprasad. People come and they're taking it before it's even served out to all the devotees. Everything should go upstairs, get served out equally. And if there's anything left, then you start. But you see some devotees, they come to the Sunday feast, and they start filling up takeaway containers before all the public has even been served. So that's not the right mentality. First, we should serve everyone. If there's anything left, then we can take it. Sometimes I lie on the surface of the earth. Sometimes on leaves, grass or stone. Sometimes on a pile of ashes, or sometimes, by the will of others, in a place on a first-class bed with pillows. So, Jimuna Lila, you'd like to read that?
The Lord has given us instruction to eat different types of birds, for one lies them according to one's body. Sometimes one takes birds as an animal and sometimes as a thing. When he takes birds as an animal, he can fly them on the ground, and when he takes birds as a thing or a very rich man, he is allowed to lie in first-class rooms in huge palaces decorated with beds and other furniture. Such facilities are not available, however, as a street full of children and children. Rather, they are available by the Supreme Guru. Or by the arrangement of Mara, as stated in Bhagavad Gita, Ishvara Sarvabhutani, Vibhesha Yajana Vishwati, Brahmanan Sarvabhutani, Yantra Yajana Namalaya. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wandering of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy. The living entity, according to his material desire, receives different types of bodies, which are nothing but machines offered by material nature according to the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By the will of the Supreme, one must take different bodies with different means for lying down.
So what are the points?
I was wondering how did he know about this pastime?
How? Some people are very advanced. They're trikalagya. They know about past, present, and future. You have to be very advanced, though. So. Any other point? So, Prabhupada is pointing out in this section, of the Bhagavatam is pointing out that we should live very simply. As devotees, we should voluntarily be simple. Although Ambarish Prabhu is a millionaire, he owns Ford Motor Company, he owns Volvo, he owns Jaguar, he owns all these car companies, but he actually sleeps on the floor. A very renowned person. So even though he has so much wealth, but he just lives quite simply. He drives a Volvo. You know, nice car. I mean, it's a luxury car, but you know, he doesn't drive a Rolls Royce or a, you know, like he doesn't have a chauffeur or anything. He just lives like quite a normal person, quite modest, considering the size of his wealth. So devotees should live simply. Even though we may be very wealthy, and we can use that wealth in Krishna's service, but we should live very simply ourselves. Now, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur points out in this verse that everything that we get is coming from our previous karma. So some devotees will be wealthy, some devotees will be poor. That is your previous karma. So some of us are just destined not to have a lot of money. And other devotees are destined to have lots of money. So that is your karma. So regardless of the situation, you should use that wealth in Krishna's service. Regardless of your situation, you should just become dedicated to Krishna. Don't become carried away by material circumstances. And we have to understand in this material world that things can be taken away as quickly as they can be given. We see many examples. Right? Devotees were poor, then they became wealthy, and then they became poor again. So don't become overly attached. And don't think that things will stay. If something is, if you have material opulence, don't think that that will necessarily stay like that. So use that opulence in Krishna's service. That's the safeguard. Another interesting point is that at the time of your birth, certain things are predestined. And one of the things that is predestined is your wealth. So one interesting point, which was pointed out by Ajita Prabhu, who was the farm manager up in New Govardhan, he was giving a class, and he said that for many devotees, because they're very renounced in the early part of their life, then the wealth, because everyone has a certain amount of wealth you'll get in this lifetime, because they're renounced in the early part of their life as brahmacharis and so forth, at the end of their life they're given much more. And those devotees who get carried away with accumulating material possessions, quite often they use up their stock of wealth, which they're destined to have in the early part of their life, and they may struggle when they get older. So it's always good to be renounced and simple, because then your wealth will stay with you longer. And I've seen examples like Atul Krishna Prabhu and Rupa Raghunath Prabhu, my good friends. Both of them were brahmacharis for 20 years or so, and they had nothing practically, gave everything to ISKCON, collected millions of dollars for ISKCON, and then as soon as they got married, right, in their 40s or they're a little bit older, and they'd been a brahmachari for a long time, Krishna just gave them a whole lot of wealth. Hundreds of thousands of dollars. They both, you know, Atul got an inheritance from a auntie in Ireland who he'd never met. And she left him a huge amount of money, and then Rupa also got a big inheritance also. So if you dedicate yourself to Krishna, Krishna will give you what you need. Any points?
So how much is that
A lot of it's to do with our karma. Like that, so. And then whatever Krishna wants to give you, then that's what he will. He will give yours.
But I said Krishna can order everything.
He can if he wants.
He looks up and he gives.
Yeah. If he wants to give you more, he'll give you more. But a lot of it is just to do with your karma, module. Where your Jupiter is situated at the time of your birth.
But he can, if his stars don't work when Krishna
is there. No, they still work.
Yeah.
Yeah. If Prabhupada says the stars still work. But if Krishna wants to change something, he can change something also. Okay. O my Lord, I bathe myself. Sometimes I bathe myself very nicely. Smear sandalwood pulp all over my body. Put on a flower garland and dress in fine garments and ornaments. Then I travel like a king on the back of an elephant or on a chariot or horse. Sometimes, however, I travel naked like a person haunted by a ghost. So it's the same point again. What is the Brahmana speaking about in this verse?
The life in general.
What's that?
Whatever
you do. Yeah, like that. Or he's speaking about transmigration. He's speaking about different lives. Some life, in other words, what he's saying is one life you'll be rich, one life you'll be poor. Right? That's just the way the material world is. Right? So don't become too attached, because even in this life, everything can completely change. You see some devotees, their lives just completely change. Suddenly they're wealthy, all this wealth comes, or the opposite happens. They're very wealthy and suddenly everything just gets taken away. Even in Prabhupada's life, you see all these situations. Three times in Prabhupada's grihastha life, everything got taken away. One time there was a fire. Right, one time his family misused the funds and he built up his wealth and then it just got taken away again. So it's the nature of the material world. So don't become too attached to material situations because they can change very quickly. Okay. Different people are of different mentalities. Therefore, it is not my business either to praise them or to blaspheme them. I only desire their welfare, hoping that they will agree to become one with the Super Soul, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna.
What
does it mean to become one with
the
Super Soul?
Does it mean merging? One with the Super Soul?
It doesn't mean merging.
So...
It's just the way it's been written. That's all. Janish?
As soon as one comes to the platform of Bhakti Yoga, one understands fully the Supreme Personality of God in Vasudeva is the goal of life. Vasudeva Sarvam Viti Samahasana Sudundrabaha. This is the instruction of all the Vedic literature. Vedesha Sarve Ahameva Vidya. There is no use in praising someone for material qualifications or blaspheming him for material disqualifications. In the material world, good and bad have no meaning because if one is good, he may be elevated to a higher planetary system, and if one is bad, he may be degraded to the lower planetary systems. People of different mentalities are sometimes elevated and sometimes degraded. But this is not the goal of life. Rather, the goal of life is to become free from elevation and degradation and take to Krishna consciousness. Therefore, a saintly person does not discriminate between that which is supposedly good and supposedly bad. Rather, he desires for everyone to be happy in Krishna consciousness, which is the ultimate goal of life.
So Krishna is teaching us in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that we should develop this consciousness of Pandita Samadarshana. So we should just see things equally. Don't become overly attached. Krishna says in the fifth chapter of the Gita, one who has knowledge sees pebbles, stones and gold as the same. He doesn't become bewildered. So we should also learn to develop this consciousness that we don't become bewildered when we have some material facilities. And we should just try to preach Krishna consciousness. Like Prahlad Maharaj. What is it? Prahlad Maharaj's example in this last section, the previous five chapters. He said he's not concerned about himself. He's simply concerned with all the fools and rascals. So the Brahmana is also saying like that. I'm not so concerned about myself. I'm just concerned about helping others become Krishna conscious. That is the right attitude for everybody. The mental concoction or discrimination between good and bad should be accepted as one unit and then invested in the mind, which should then be invested in the false ego. The false ego should be invested in the total material energy. This is the process of fighting false discrimination. So this is like the platform of jnana, that we see the material energy and we analyze it in terms of its quality of being separate from spirit. So Prabhupada discusses the process of neti-neti. We say the material energy is not this, it is not this. Spirit is not this, it is not. We see the difference between matter and spirit. Now Prabhupada points out that this is automatically achieved by devotional service. Just by performing devotional service gradually, you'll understand the difference between matter and spirit. And you'll be able to differentiate between the both. You won't become bewildered by the material body, and you'll see everything on the spiritual platform. A learned, thoughtful person must realize that material existence is illusion. This is possible only by self-realization. A self-realized person who has actually seen the truth should retire from all material activities, being situated in self-realization. So this is not an easy platform to come to. Right? What is the first thing Krishna teaches in the Bhagavad Gita? You're not the body. So what has been spoken of in this verse? Right? Exactly the same point. This is the first instruction of the Bhagavad Gita right here. But even though it's the first instruction of the Bhagavad Gita, it's not very easy to understand. None of us have understood we're not the body, we're the soul. But this is the first thing that Krishna instructs us in the Bhagavad Gita. One time, Prahlad Nanda Swami, he was here, I think he was here or in Adelaide somewhere, and I was there. And Maharaj said, you know, what should I discuss? Sunday feast lecture or something. He said, what should I discuss? And I said, you know, discuss this or that. And he said, why don't I just discuss this part of the Bhagavad Gita? You know, you're not the body or the soul. And I said, Maharaj, we hear that all the time. You know, let's speak about something, you know, a little more interesting or different. He said, we may hear it all the time, but none of us understand it. So we need to hear it again. That's why the Bhagavad Gita is telling us again and again and again. You're not the body, you are the soul. There's a difference between matter and spirit, because we have not realized it yet.
It looks like this person seems to be very similar to one personality, or Kamala Maharishi, who used to live in India. In all these verses, I was just going back and checking, in only one verse, he has said Lord Narayan. Pretty much he's more talking about body and soul, and he hasn't talked much about devotional service in that sense. But I was just checking where he's talking about it. Only in the opening verse when he speaks, he's saying, Lord Maharaj, that Narayana is within your heart because you are pure devotee. So, not sure whether he's a bhakti yogi or whether he's like a paramatma vadi. Because the way he's addressing also Prahlad Maharaj is that Narayana is manifesting in your heart.
Yeah.
And he's not speaking much of bhakti yogi. He's speaking great things, but he's not speaking the highest.
Yeah, he's speaking about sambandha jnana, the difference between matter and spirit. But it seems he's a devotee because, as you said, he mentions directly Lord Narayan, like that. So it seems that he is a devotee. But part of the devotional philosophy is the, because I mean Krishna's treatise in the Bhagavad Gita is Bhakti Yoga. If you look at the Gita as a whole, we'd say the topic is Bhakti Yoga. That's the principal topic. But in that first section, verses 11 to 30 of the second chapter of the Gita, Krishna is speaking Jnana Yoga, or Jnana, spiritual knowledge. So, same thing here. So this is relevant to us, because we have to learn this before we can progress to the... But it seems that he is a devotee.
Maharaj, there could be different types of devotees. Who likes to be actively engaged in devotional service, and others who like to practice austerity, and others who really just want to practice that.
Yeah, it's protecting, practicing a type of one particular process of self-realization. Because he's a Brahmana, he's very detached, he has this nature, he's very, very elevated, this is a previous age, so it's easier for him to do like this. Very difficult for us to.
There are many Babaji's in Vrindavan who are also
Babaji's?
In Vrindavan. I'm not talking about Babaji's who are like Gaur Kishwardas Babaji. I'm not talking about those kind of Babaji's. I'm talking about like if there's someone called Neem Karoli Baba, you might be knowing. So he also used to lie in one place and then used to talk about body and soul. So who are already out of the bodily platform. But in one sense, you can call them jnanis with some tinge of bhakti. But they are not in the same, still they are not the same league as Gaur Kishwardas Babaji or pure devotees. So he seems to be somewhere in Brahman or Paramatma area.
Yeah, maybe. But the fact that he does mention Lord Narayana seems to indicate Bhagavan realization. It's a part of the philosophy. Like, if you look at a lot of Prabhupada's teaching, it's just, you're not the body or the soul. So someone who looks at Prabhupada's teachings may say, well, Prabhupada appeared to be preaching on a very particular platform, but obviously Prabhupada had incredible realizations. So I think... I would say he is a fully realized soul, Krishna conscious person, but he's speaking according to the level of the audience or what they may need to hear, or particular, because Prabhupada would speak like that a lot. A lot of Prabhupada's preaching was just, you're not the body or the soul, he would just present like that. But what he knew himself was much higher. Prahlad Maharaj, you are certainly a self-realized soul and a devotee of the Supreme Lord. You do not care for public opinion or so-called scriptures. For this reason, I have described to you without hesitation the history of my self-realization. So, he is instructing Prahlad Maharaj, do not care for public opinion. Why do we not care for public opinion? Because if we listen to the public, we never take up devotional service. Because the public are not interested in devotional service. So we have to neglect the public's general opinion and just focus on Krishna consciousness. So all of us have to do that. We have to renounce what the material world is doing and just focus on Krishna consciousness. Even though we appear to be in the minority, we just have to stay very fixed. And the final verse. Narad Muni continued, after Prahlad Maharaj, the king of the demons, heard these instructions from the saint, he understood the occupational duties of a perfect person, Paramahamsa. Thus he duly worshipped the saint, took his permission, and then left for his own home. So Prabhupada points out that Krishna Tattva Veta Se Guru Hai. What is the first line of the verse? Kiba Vipra, Kiba Nyasi, Sudra Kene Nai. Ye Krishna Tattva Veta, Se Guru Hai. So Chaitanya Charitamrita says in the teachings of Ramananda Roy that regardless of externally what the guru may appear to be in terms of his body in this material world, if he knows Krishna Tattva, or the truth about Krishna, he should be accepted as guru. So Prahlad Maharaj, we could say, well, Prahlad Maharaj is a demon, a daitya. Normally we will not listen to demons or daityas, but he is a Mahajan, therefore we accept him. And this Brahmana may appear to be like some disheveled person who's laying on the ground covered with dust and so forth, but he's speaking pure transcendental knowledge, same as Jad Bharata. Speaking pure transcendental knowledge. So if someone knows Krishna Tattva, we accept them as guru. Sometimes, as we said last week, you know, sometimes the Western devotees get criticized, or they're Westerners. We need an Indian guru. But if the Westerner knows Krishna Tattva, then he's qualified to represent Krishna. So he must be accepted as guru. Okay, so... no classes next week. And then the week after, we'll begin chapter 14, which is Grihastha Dharma. Please come, learn how to be Pakka Grihasthas. Grihastha Dharma ki, Sannyas Dharma ki.